Save the Semantics, episode 249. It is March 6th, 2024. My name is Myro. This is the podcast where I ramble on for a bit about some shit. Recording this on a Wednesday in the middle of the week. I was able to find some time, able to carve out some time to record a little something. I like doing these in just like kind of in bits and pieces, you know what I mean? I like kind of being able to, this is honestly like a little mini break for me. I kind of treat it that way anyway. A little sort of, reprieve from the work day. And then plus I can go for a little walk as well. I'm actually recording this in, well, it's kind of raining right now. It's sprinkling. It's nothing, it's not heavy at all, but got a little rain going, and I feel like this is sort of nice. It's not like heavy. Like if I was recording this while it was storming, that would be stupid, but right now it's just kind of sprinkling, and I haven't been outside necessarily in a while, and so I want to be out here. I want to be out here, so here I am. I've been sort of I slept really poorly yesterday, going into, you know, like last night, waking up this morning, I overslept a little bit, which always throws my whole agenda upside down. It is the worst feeling. It is one of the worst feelings that I can experience, is oversleeping, and then just the drowsiness effect of that. That, and, you know, undersleeping, just poor sleep in general, ruins my life, honestly. I've talked about this many, many times, about sleep quality and, you know, the amount of sleep I get and everything like that, but it's been a while since I've had, like, a really bad, you know, period, or not period, but it's been a while since I've had a moment where I've slept incredibly poorly, so much so that it's like just, you know, completely ruined my day. And I can't necessarily say that it's ruined my day today, but man, I'm just like completely out of it, and I've just been struggling to get by on things. I'm still drowsy to this moment. I've had coffee, I've had my caffeine, but I just, it's a struggle. It's a real struggle to stay awake and everything like that. It sucks, because it's just like you get an extra hour of sleep, which is what kind of what happened to me, and then because it's not within your circadian rhythms, it messes you up, because you wake up kind of at the wrong time, right? You come out, you wake up while you're still in deep sleep or whatever. And so you don't get that full, cycle in. So you only go through halfway, which is like why naps and stuff, long naps especially, are not a good idea. You know, as I've mentioned in the past, I've taken the long naps before, and they're awful. I mean, I just feel awful after them. I just feel like a complete vegetable. So, I mean, it's so annoying. And I woke up at around 8:15, 8:20 or something, and I was like, okay, I gotta get up. And then I fell asleep. I didn't even realize it. I woke up again, it was 9:30 or something, and I was like, oh shit. It's completely just ruined it, you know what I mean? And I had to rush and get ready and stuff. It sucks. I'm very fortunate that I don't have a tight, you know, schedule to get up and work and anything like that. But I'm very grateful for that. But still, it sucks, because it completely ruins the timing on the rest of your day. So that's been my morning. It's very annoying. Because it's all just kind of your body doing its thing, and you're trying your best to mediate things and try to, it's also, you know, it's your body letting you know that you're not getting enough sleep. So then you try to get more sleep, and in the process, it just kind of ruins things. Like, it's better to wake up a little tired earlier than it is to wake up later and feel even more tired because of the fact that you didn't, you know, cycle through a full sleep cycle, basically. So that's been me today. I've been trudging along. I've been sludging through today. And now I'm here. Quick catch up on NBA stuff. As we're sort of nearing the end of the season, as we have sort of 1 month remaining, more or less, left in the regular season, things are kind of sort of shaping up in both the Eastern and Western conferences. Starting out to be quite the tight race for, I would say, like the bottom half of the playoff bracket and into the play-in, right? A lot of contention there, for sure. There's very small game breaks in between each teams. It's every game is going to matter for a lot of those teams, including the Warriors. It's going to be interesting to see how things shape up. The Warriors are playing the Bucks tonight. So I'm going to try to catch that when I can, if I can. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be a blackout because they're both showing it nationally and locally. So every time they show it locally, you can't watch it unless you have a subscription to your local service provider, or if you have some other subscription to something like YouTube TV, where you're able to watch sports. But YouTube TV is incredibly expensive, and I've only really done like a free trial for that, and I have no intention of paying $70 or something just to watch the game. So I'm going to use some alternative methods to watch. The game is going to be tonight for that. It will be interesting to see how we shape up against the Bucks, who've been playing pretty well recently. Currently the hottest team in the league. Celtics lost last night to the Cavs. That broke their 11-game winning streak. They completely demolished us on Sunday. It's a 50-point game, 50-point loss. One of the worst losses for this team in a very long time. I tuned in for the first quarter. I think I watched 2 minutes, and then I was like, all right, I think I'm good. I think I got the gist of it. It just was not going to be our night. They were hitting everything. We just couldn't do anything against them. And yeah, that was that. And you just kind of have to, I don't know, move on. I don't know how much reflection you can really do. It's just one of those incredibly bad losses. And we've had some pretty bad losses this year too. I remember like a couple of the other ones that's come to mind are the ones against Toronto, where we lost by like 30 against them. And then the one against the Pelicans, where we lost by 40. So, I mean, you know, obviously the one against the Celtics is probably the worst one, but we've had some pretty bad losses. So, it's just more so that those happened before the All-Star break. So when we were streaking, when something like this comes up, it's a little bit more shocking, I suppose, but it's not necessarily something that's super out of the norm for this season. We've had some pretty awful losses this year, so it happens, really. It does happen, and especially in this league where just the scoring and everything is completely out of whack. I think it's plausible that this type of these types of games do happen once in a while. There was also that game 2 years ago when they were on their championship run where we lost by like almost 40 points or something to Memphis. I remember that game very well because it was just such a it was such an outlier in comparison to every other game. So again, like I said, these types of things happen in the league nowadays. And then also, the Celtics are currently the best team in the league. So I think all of those things add up. But yeah, I've been sort of getting back into watching games and sort of paying attention to games and stuff. I try to watch what I can. But it's been, you know, I haven't, it's sort of it's similar thing where I'm not necessarily tuned into every single game like I was at the beginning of the season. I think the thing about that as well is, you know, you don't really know, you know, what to expect. Like, everybody's at a level ground, everybody's at, you know, 0-0. And so the very first week or couple of weeks of the season, it's still very variable. Teams aren't exactly established who they are yet. And so there's more intrigue, I think, in that regard. So that's why I'm maybe more focused and more interested in seeing where every team is, as opposed to now where things are much more established and you know who's good and you know who's bad. So the only thing that really matters going into the end of the season is the standings for playoffs and play-in. That's kind of where the intrigue lies. So there's really, on that front, you know, there's really only so many teams you can necessarily pay attention to. You can sort of, I don't want to say disregard the lower seeded teams. I mean, of course, there are fans that still watch. Like, I'm not at all, you know, throwing them to the wayside. I'm just saying, for my own purpose of watching the league, I can sort of be like, okay, I don't need to necessarily watch these other teams, other than maybe, you know, Wembanyama and the Spurs. I think that's sort of the exception for the, you know, teams that are under 500. So that's kind of the NBA catch up. I think that there's going to be, there's going to be quite a lot of development, I feel, in the coming weeks, in terms of, you know, teams that can potentially distance themselves and, secure, you know, top playoff position. I think in the East, it's pretty well established that Boston's going to most likely maintain, unless like Milwaukee or Cleveland goes on like a crazy run. It's pretty well established that Boston's going to be the number one seed. And if neither Milwaukee or Cleveland falters in any sort of way, then those are going to be the top three teams. And then the rest, it's 5 through 10, or rather 4 through 10, where it's very volatile and a lot of things can change. And then again, same thing in the West, 1 through 4, more or less, even though there is still a possibility of someone like the Pelicans catching up to the Clippers. There's a 3-game break in between those two teams. I think the remaining portion, the remaining half of the playoff standings, again, there's just so much. There's only like a 1.5 game break in between those teams. So a lot can happen. So something to really just keep your eye on and see if there are many really, you know, teams that are able to separate, secure positions in the top, you know, top half of the bracket. Moving on. Let's talk some Dune. So I watched part 2 this past weekend. I was invited by a friend to go watch it, and it was good. It was really good. Perfect timing, like I mentioned. Watched it pretty much right after I finished watching the part 1 Friday night, so it really just lined up perfectly. I had complete memory of what happened in the first film. And it was incredibly well done. I thought it was very epic. I think I enjoyed part 2 a little bit more than part 1. I liked the variety in set pieces in the second movie. I really loved, there was this one section in the movie that I thought contrasted incredibly well to the scenes that were set on Arrakis, the planet where it was essentially almost black and white. I thought that was fascinating, and I thought that was incredibly well done. It was such a cool, it was just such a cool environment, and it really did feel sort of alien, and it just made you kind of feel like uncomfortable and super cool. Really dug that section of the movie, and I enjoyed the, you know, I enjoyed the rest of the movie as well. I thought the action was really well done. I thought the scale of the movie felt very apparent to me. I felt very much that there was, you know, this kind of war that was happening amongst just like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, and you could get the sense that this is a very, you know, intergalactic kind of conflict. All of these moving pieces, all of these kind of political intrigue, geopolitics, like that sort of thing. I think it's all very, it's showcased in this movie pretty well, you know? And you kind of get a good sense of what characters' motivations are. And I enjoyed it. I think that I thought all the actors were really good. I thought they all pretty much, I don't know, they all lended themselves very well to, the script, and I thought they sold their performance very well. And, yeah, I think I'm interested in seeing if, I'm assuming if this movie does well enough that a part 3, will be greenlit and will be made. I've heard it's going to be based on like the second book, Dune Messiah. I've never read the books, like I've mentioned, but maybe I'll check it out sometime in the future. And it seems like there's maybe going to be a bit of a time skip in between the events of this movie, the second movie, or I guess the end of the first book and the beginning of the second book. So I think that could, that could provide a very intriguing sort of narrative coming out of, you know, this movie, where it seems that there's a very much a clear kind of direction where things are going. But you know, you never know what really happens. There's this concept of prophecy and, you know, identity and everything like that, and how for Paul Atreides, the main character, how his life was sort of set on a predestined course from his very birth, and, you know, all of these actors were sort of pushing him along to go in a certain direction, and he is sort of reluctantly taking on that responsibility. I like kind of that aspect. I think it's interesting. I think his character growth / development growth is maybe, you know, his character changed a lot. Growth might imply that he maybe became more of a better person, but rather I see it more that he kind of evolved into something else. And, I think that, the movie did a very good job of, you know, portraying that. I think it's very, like, he is almost unrecognizable from the beginning of the very first movie to the end of this one, right? He is a completely different character by the end. And there's, he sort of almost in a kind of, you know, reluctant kind of attitude towards accepting his position and sort of this kind of resentment too, which I thought it was sort of, you know, because he, you know, it's very clear throughout the movie that he's really trying to push off this, you know, this calling, this constant, you know, prophecy that gets pushed onto him by all these other people around him. And he eventually accepts it. It's almost in spite of things. He says, I'm taking this, and so because you people don't shut up, so I'm just gonna take it, you know. And I thought that was, you know, that was fun. I really liked the scene with him in the temple, you know, essentially claiming himself as the one Neo sort of thing, right? Some very epic moments, and I think that also the soundtrack was fantastic as well. Shout out Hans Zimmer. Yeah, a lot of good things to come out of this one. I don't have too many really, you know, big criticisms. I think it's just, it's a good flick. And apparently it is very serviceable to the original books and often provides a bit more of a, you know, more digestible format to be consumed, instead of the books, where some concepts might be a little more obtuse and abstract to be, you know, portrayed on the big screen. A lot more just palatable for a general audience, which I totally understand, the kind of the want to do that. And, yeah, I don't know. It seems that, and it seems like it's doing very well at the box office. So, that's cool. I think that's really cool. I'm a big fan of Denis Villeneuve, and, I've been a fan of his films for quite some time now. I still haven't seen everything from him. But you know, I'm a big fan of movies like Enemy and Prisoners, Arrival, Blade Runner. He has just a ton under his belt. And to add this sort of epic, this sort of, you know, potential trilogy, I think is a pretty nice, he's got a pretty nice resume going on. So yeah, I'm going to continue to be excited for, whatever he puts out, honestly. Even if it's not sci-fi related, I mean, it seems likely that he's going to direct the third movie. It would be nice if his vision sort of continued. But I also wouldn't mind seeing other movies that, other future movies that he puts out. So always keeping an eye on what Denis has got. But yeah, overall, good movie. I don't have too many criticisms, really. Just kind of hard for me to think of any. Outside of maybe some pacing and stuff. But I think I have more criticisms regarding the first movie than I do the second movie. But it's just, I don't know. As a full product, I think it works very well. So as a very, you know, if you consider the, you know, both of these movies and combine them, you know, like a 5-hour long movie, pretty nice. It's pretty good. anyways, moving on to some other things. So recently, the game Unicorn Overlord, they released a demo version for, I think, all platforms, or, you know, all available platforms. And it's gotten some very, very, you know, high reception, very high critical reception. And I am once again inclined to add another game to my continuously growing game list. I've heard the demo is pretty long as well. You can put a significant amount of time into the game, and then you can transfer that save data over onto, you know, the full game. And I thought that type of stuff is awesome. I love that when I was able to do it for Dragon Quest XI. I like that I was able to do that for Triangle Strategy. I always think it's a pretty good idea. Sure, it might be maybe financially risky because players might only play the demo, but I feel that if the demo is good enough, then you might be more inclined to buy the full package. So I think demos, I mean, if the company can afford to do something like that, I feel that demos can really provide a really good base for whether it is a good purchase for someone or not. You know what I mean? I'm very interested in trying it out. I'm very intrigued based on just kind of the, you know, talks about the game and how, you know, how good it looks and how extensive the gameplay is and the story being pretty interesting. I think that there's a lot to go off of, and then also the fact that it's made by Vanillaware, who did 13 Sentinels. I think there's a lot of really good components and aspects to this game that makes it more worthy of purchasing. And so I will maybe try the demo later on. Once again, I just have so many games, and I honestly have not been able to catch up a ton on, you know, my other games like Button Kaidos, because I've been occupied with work, plus Balatro, of course. But that is something that I have added to the list, because it seems very much up my alley in terms of what I want from, you know, a game and strategy RPG and all that stuff. So, yeah, seems fun. It seems fun. Anyways, that's going to do it for right now. We'll catch up with some more basketball stuff. I have been meaning to maybe check out the 1984 Dune movie as well, just so I can have maybe a basis for what it was like for audiences back then. And, you know, see the differences between Lynch's filmmaking and, what it was for the most recent versions. 'Cause that might be interesting. So we'll see if I do something like that. But anyways, yeah, that's going to do for now, and I will record something later this weekend. All right, recording this on a Saturday. It is March 9th, 2024. Recording this in the kind of late afternoon. Weather's nice. That's one thing I can kind of note. I'm not in a good mood. I'm not in a great mood, to be completely honest. But I wanted to record something. Basically, I just lost my, he didn't die, but I just lost my like pet tortoise. I let him out into the yard yesterday, and I just kind of kept my eye off of him for like maybe like 5 to 10 minutes. I got distracted by some task. And then he just kind of like disappeared somewhere, and like I have no idea where he is. Like, I've searched everywhere in the yard, and it's like, dude, I have no freaking clue where he is. So I'm hoping that he pops back up. Like, I feel like it's more likely than not he's gonna come up, but it's just such a careless mistake on my end. Like, I'm just so I've just been so frustrated and just like disappointed in myself. Like, it was so just careless, such an easy thing to remedy, you know what I mean? Like, I could have just kept my eye on him. I could have put him back inside for a little bit, like, instead of like going off and doing something else. Like, it was just such a little error, and it just completely screwed things up. And now he's out there. I don't know where he is. But I haven't found him. So yeah, forgive me for not being in the greatest of moods, but I also wanted to record something to kind of as a sort of distraction for myself as well. So, this is kind of, where I'm at. Hoping he pops it back up. I think that would be nice to see. Anyways, this past week, has been, yeah, I mean, it's been whatever, you know, it has been what it is, just with work and everything. I haven't slept all that well this week, to be completely honest, so I'm hoping that I can kind of get my rest this weekend, but it's been a bit hard to. Catching up with some basketball stuff. We had a couple of games this week for the Warriors. They pulled off a very nice victory against the Bucks. Basically, just got a complete blowout. I caught kind of the third quarter, and where they were really like clamping down. Really impressive performance, especially by Trayce Jackson Davis. He did an incredible job on Giannis, basically like shut him down, honestly. And then there was like Moses Moody, who was basically, he was like clamping up Dame Lillard. Just a really great performance, which was then unfortunately followed up by a loss against Chicago. Back-to-backs are always tough. I dislike back-to-backs. Like, this was still, you know, this was a home back-to-back, so not as bad as a road back-to-back, but still won nonetheless. So, but they were also on a back-to-back, so it's a little difficult to make like excuses, but I'm just saying, you know, we should just get rid of them altogether. Curry did go out with an injury. It's since come out that it seems to be a minor sort of ankle tweak, so hopefully he gets back soon. Hopefully he gets the rest that he needs. So it's gonna be a bit tough, man. An incredibly impressive win followed up by a pretty disappointing loss is, I just feel like, is just kind of the culmination, is a great synopsis of what this season has been so far. There's been some really highs, some really nice highs earlier on in the season, especially where we kind of started off, and then obviously the months that kind of followed, very poor showings, very poor performances, a lot of lost leads. So that was kind of, you know, that sort of like turned things on its head, and now we're sort of back in this period, after the post All-Star break, where we've had some very impressive, where we had a nice little streak going, but then, you know, followed up by a loss to a team that we were competitive with and are sort of in a maybe similar vein. But honestly, I feel Warriors are a little higher than the Bulls at this point, but still, like, it's sort of like battle of the mid, basically. And that's kind of where we are at this point this year. So, I think that the expectation that I sort of set forth, or the want, rather, that I set forth in a previous recording of wanting to get up to at least the sixth seed is a little difficult and honestly almost out of the question at this point. I think it is much more likely and much more just more of a better position to just accept that we're going to be in the play-in and kind of go off of there, try to get home court in the play-in, so the seventh or eighth seed would be the most desirable, obviously. But trying to get up to the sixth seed might be a little difficult at this point, especially considering that there's a decent game break between, I believe the Suns are now the sixth seed, right? They've had some victories over the Nuggets, and they've kind of continued to string some wins, so they're currently in a better position than the other teams in the lower bracket of the Western Conference playoff picture. So I guess we'll kind of keep our eyes open on, you know, how things kind of look moving forward. So yeah, that's kind of how things are on the Warriors front. They're going to be playing the Spurs later tonight. I'm going to try to check that out. Yeah, hopefully we can pull off a win. We do have home court. I don't know if Wembanyama's playing. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully we don't underperform. but I think Curry might be out too, so it could be tough. It could be a tough win. Or it could be a tough game. I shouldn't even like say that it's a win yet, because it's not even given. Yeah, hopefully they pull it off. Some other things to note. In the NBA, I mean, that's kind of really it. Yeah, things are kind of, again, it's wrapping up. This is probably going to be what the pod is going to be for the next month or so leading up into the playoffs. The next few weeks leading up into the playoffs. Just because it's just kind of like, all right, just looking at your watch, seeing when the regular season's going to end. There have been some good games, for sure, but yeah, we're all waiting for the playoffs, basically. What did I want to talk about today? Let's talk about Akira Toriyama. So the news came out on Thursday, I believe, that he passed away earlier this month. That was disclosed publicly this week, and it was quite a shock to me. I read that news on Thursday night, and it was basically like right after I got off work, and it was quite the shock hearing that. It really just kind of came out of nowhere. It felt just like a very monumental passing, just considering the impact that he has on the, you know, world of anime, video games, just like you could argue art in general. I think he was and is considered to be one of the most significant like animation / like cartoon artists of all time. So it was, yeah, I felt that. It felt like, I usually am not someone who's like very affected by, you know, celebrity or like popular figure deaths. Like most of the time I'm like, if it is something, if it is like a young actor passing, then sometimes it is like shocking. But I think the weight of Toriyama's, his death kind of was a bit more, I felt there was a bit more heft to, and a bit more weight to kind of, his passing, just because I really felt, you know, his impact. I think there was a really, I've really experienced like a significant portion of my life enjoying his work, or at least, you know, work that he was integral to. I was affected by it. Obviously, I think people that are fans of Dragon Ball especially felt this, just because, obviously his impact in the world of manga and anime, just how much inspired, you know, shonen anime, just like power fantasies and just kind of anime in general, I think it's not something that can be understated or overstated. I mostly enjoy, so I was never like a big Dragon Ball fan. I never really watched or read the anime or manga or anything like that, but I very much understand how significant he was. How I experienced his work was mostly through Dragon Quest. He was responsible, Dragon Quest, Chrono Trigger, you know, he was responsible for the character and monster art design. Just kind of a very, you know, just if you look at the box art of these games, it's like the first thing you see, man, and that kind of like draws you in. And I think that it's going to be interesting just kind of reflecting on the games and reflecting on just the art and just how, I don't know, his style is so iconic, is so recognizable. It's just like, oh, this is clearly like Toriyama. It's going to be just sort of, it's going to be interesting on the front of Dragon Quest moving forward, seeing what they're going to do. Dragon Quest 12 is still technically in production. We have gotten no news since its initial announcement. It really feels like there is like this kind of sense of finality with Dragon Quest 12. But I think that Dragon Quest 11 is kind of the magnum opus of all of the respective creators of the, you know, series, the kind of the original members. Obviously Yuji Horii, Sugiyama Koichi, who, you know, is a pretty controversial figure. And then of course, Akira Toriyama. So I think that, you know, with sort of Yuji Horii being kind of the remaining individual person kind of left from that sort of core group from the original games from so long ago, I think that there is this sense that there's kind of this sort of like swan song for 12. And I'm interested in seeing. I feel that there's going to be, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much, you know, how significant his Toriyama's contributions were for this final game, but if he was responsible for artwork and like art direction or whatever, I think that there's most likely going to be some kind of more delay, you know what I mean? Which is fine. I think, you know, they can kind of take their time. It would be nice to see some news, but I'm not in a rush to see, kind of, you know, as long as like kind of the work is you know, as sort of, you know, done as well as possible. Yeah, Dragon Quest was one of the very first series that I've ever played. I've talked about Dragon Quest before, but I guess now is like a good opportunity to kind of talk about, you know, how significant the series has been in my life. Along with Zelda and I guess Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest was really my first introduction to gaming in general. I believe I played Dragon Quest 7 was sort of like my first entry point. I didn't get very far into it, but I played kind of like the beginning chapters of that game. That game is incredibly long, by the way. Probably the longest in the series, but I remember playing it with my mom at an early age and just kind of going through it with it together. She brought over her Japanese PlayStation 1 and she had some, you know, she had Dragon Quest, she had like Final Fantasy. Those are kind of the games that she had available for her PlayStation 1. And, yeah, I just remember playing Dragon Quest 7 and just kind of exploring the world and everything like that. One thing that I do kind of vividly remember, sort of outside of the game, is the guides, the guidebooks that, the kind of the official guidebooks of those games, and kind of reading through them. This is kind of where, you know, the art of Toriyama really kind of shows up. I don't know if he was responsible for doing the artwork for, like, the items and all of that, but, I mean, character design, monster design, that's all there. And I feel like, honestly, those guidebooks are, in a way, a bit of its own kind of, like, art showcase, mini art showcase. It's its own little art book, in a way, right? With story threads, and it sort of provides, you know, a walkthrough. It provides, like, character guides, you know, item descriptions. It provides all of that, supplemented by the artwork. And I think that it's really hard to, like, I'm not an art critic or anything like that, but I just remember how much more, like, how much color and how just sort of this sense of joy that I kind of felt reading those guidebooks and looking at the pictures and just kind of, like, you know, thumbing through the pages and everything like that. And I really think that the, just his art and everything just was so, I don't know, it was just so colorful, and it just made me, I always just kept revisiting those, like, guidebooks, for the Dragon Quest series, because it was just such, like, I don't know, it was, like, fun to read. It was honestly, at times, kind of like its own, like, comic, you know, like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily telling a story or anything like that, but I just felt this, I don't know, it was just fun to read and fun to look at the art and everything. And so I, I can't undervalue that, you know, just how much that was in terms of kind of my general enjoyment of the game. You know, if you look at the game itself, obviously the older Dragon Quest games, the character models are pixelated and everything like that, but if you're sort of introduced, you know, to the official kind of artwork and their character model and their characters, you can sort of, I don't know, you can sort of envision what their characters would look like if it was maybe in a more, you know, 3D space, which they, you know, realized in Dragon Quest VIII as sort of the first, you know, fully 3D Dragon Quest game. I still just got, I don't know, you get kind of attached to the idea of a character just based on what their official character model artwork looks like, you know what I mean? You can kind of get a sense of, I don't know, like, it's just a combination of a lot of things. And I think it's not necessarily something that I've even really thought about too deeply, just how important it is to have good art, good, you know, good character art. But I'm just thinking about just, like, all of these, like, characters from the series that, you know, some of my favorite characters and some of my favorite, you know, from some of my favorite games. And it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's just such a clear vision for each of them. And you can get a sense, you just get so much from just the visual side of things, you know what I mean? If they're smirking or whatever, or just the way and they carry themselves. I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably a lot more apparent in something like Dragon Ball. I just, you know, it's just not something that I necessarily engaged with. But I feel it much more on the side of the gaming, you know, the gaming side of things as opposed to the anime. But I still feel, you know, Toriyama's impact regardless. I just wanted to kind of make note of that. I wanted to talk about it a little bit and sort of maybe commemorate his work. There's probably so much more that can be said about him and his, like, legacy and whatnot, just because of how much of an impact he has had just across industries, across, you know, the ages. Just a really unfortunate passing at a pretty young age as well. I think now is also a good time to celebrate his work and everything that he's done, because there's quite a lot of it. Now is honestly a good time, as good as any, to get into Dragon Quest. I feel this kind of sense to revisit Dragon Quest XI and experience that, just the splendor and just the vibrancy of that world and everything that, you know, Toriyama was a very significant part of, and really embellish that, really kind of take that in, because I think that is something worth exploring and something worth revisiting. I've only played through 11 once, but it was a incredible game, and I have this sort of feeling of wanting to revisit and play it again. I also want to revisit and play some of the other Dragon Quest games as well, but I don't know. I also hope that news for 3 remake comes out, but again, that's probably another thing where that might get a bit of a delay as well. But we'll see. I'm not in a rush to see those works be rushed by any means. I think they should take their time. That's kind of my little spiel on Akira Toriyama. I really appreciate and am thankful for his work and how much of a, you know, part that he's played in some of my favorite games and one of my favorite game series. Anyways, that's gonna do it for this week. Thanks for listening. As always, this has been Save the Semantics, signing off.